Good evening and welcome to Bethel again tonight. Good to see you all in the house of God. Please don't rush off after service. Please come downstairs for more fellowship and light refreshments. Tuesday night at 7:30, we've got a visit from our brother and friend Gareth Edwards from the Christian Institute at 7:30 on Tuesday. All other meetings throughout the week are as per the newsletter for Bethel for November, December. There are a few more Bethel newsletters on the table in the vestibule if you would like to take a copy. Wednesday morning at 11 o'clock is our monthly additional prayer meeting, and all are welcome to that meeting. That's Wednesday morning at 11 o'clock. Next Sunday services will be at the usual times, and God willing, they'll be led by the Reverend Ivan Perkins of Nodfa Pontydulys, and our pastor John Williams will be preaching at Nodfa, so please remember them in your prayers. The Christmas food bank was taken down on Thursday. I haven't been given an amount, but please could all Christmas food items be brought into the church no later than December the 8th to be taken down on the 12th of December, because that's the day they will be preparing the hampers ready for distribution. And anything that's brought in after the 8th of December will be taken down to the food bank in January. I'd like to thank all those who have contributed to that throughout the year. A list has been prepared of names of people attending Bethel, so that if you intend sending Christmas cards, there's a list of names available if you'd like to have a copy. That's all the note says. I'll hand the service over to John. Thank you.
For our reading this evening, we're turning to the second book of Samuel, to chapter 3, commencing to read at verse 6 to the end of the chapter, verse 39. To Samuel, chapter 3, commencing at verse 6. During the war between the house of Saul and the house of David, Abner had been strengthening his own position in the house of Saul. Now Saul had a concubine named Rizpah, daughter of Ahiah, and Ishbosheth said to Abner, "Why did you sleep with my father's concubine?" Abner was very angry because of what Ishbosheth said, and he answered, "Am I a dog's head on Judah's side? This very day I am loyal to the house of your father Saul and to his family and friends. I haven't handed you over to David, yet now you accuse me of an offence involving this woman. May God deal with Abner, be it ever so severely, if I do not do for David what the Lord promised him on oath, and transfer the kingdom from the house of Saul and establish David's throne over Israel and Judah from Dan to Beersheba." Ishbosheth did not dare to say another word to Abner because he was afraid of him. Then Abner sent messengers on his behalf to say to David, "Whose land is it? Make an agreement with me and I will help you bring all Israel over to you." "Good," said David, "I will make an agreement with you, but I demand one thing of you. Do not come into my presence unless you bring Michal, daughter of Saul, when you come to see me." Then David sent messengers to Ishbosheth, son of Saul, demanding, "Give me my wife Michal, whom I betrothed to myself for the price of 100 Philistine foreskins." So Ishbosheth gave orders and had her taken away from her husband Paltiel, son of Laish. Her husband, however, went with her, weeping behind her all the way to Bahurim. Then Abner said to him, "Go back home." So he went back. Abner conferred with the elders of Israel and said, "For some time you have wanted to make David your king. Now do it. For the Lord promised David, by my servant David, I will rescue my people Israel from the hand of the Philistines and from the hand of all their enemies." Abner also spoke to the Benjamites in person. Then he went to Hebron to tell David everything that Israel and the whole house of Benjamin wanted to do. When Abner, who had 20 men with him, came to David at Hebron, David prepared a feast for him and his men. Then Abner said to David, "Let me go at once and assemble all Israel to my lord the king, so that they may make a compact with you, and that you may rule over all that your heart desires." So David sent Abner away, and he went in peace. Just then, David's men and Joab returned from a raid and brought with him a great deal of plunder. But Abner was no longer with David in Hebron because David had sent him away, and he had gone in peace. When Joab and all the soldiers with him arrived, he was told that Abner, son of Ner, had come to the king, and that the king had sent him away, and that he had gone in peace. So Joab went to the king and said, "What have you done? Look, Abner came to you. Why did you let him go? Now he is gone. You know Abner, son of Ner. He came to deceive you and observe your movements and find out everything you are doing." Joab then left David and sent messengers after Abner, and they brought him back from the well of Sirrah. But David did not know it. Now when Abner returned to Hebron, Joab took him aside into the gateway as though to speak to him privately. And there, to avenge the blood of his brother Asahel, Joab stabbed him in the stomach and he died. Later, when David heard about this, he said, "I and my kingdom are forever innocent before the Lord concerning the blood of Abner, son of Ner. May his blood fall upon the head of Joab and upon all his father's house. May Joab's house never be without someone who has a running sore or leprosy, or who leans on a crutch, or who falls by the sword, or who lacks food." Joab and his brother Abishai murdered Abner because he had killed their brother Asahel in the battle of Gibeon. Then David said to Joab and all the people with him, "Tear your clothes and put on sackcloth and walk in mourning in front of Abner." King David himself walked behind the bier. They buried Abner in Hebron, and the king wept aloud at Abner's tomb. All the people wept also. The king sang this lament for Abner: "Should Abner have died as the lawless die? Your hands were not bound, your feet were not fettered. You fell as one falls before wicked men." And all the people wept over him again. Then they all came and urged David to eat something while it was still day. But David took an oath, saying, "May God deal with me, be it ever so severely, if I taste bread or anything else before the sun sets." All the people took note and were pleased. Indeed, everything the king did pleased them. So on that day, all the people and all Israel knew that the king had no part in the murder of Abner, son of Ner. Then the king said to his men, "Do you not realize that a prince and a great man has fallen in Israel this day? And today, though I am anointed king, I am weak, and these sons of Zeruiah are too strong for me. May the Lord repay the evildoer according to his evil deeds." Difficult passage for us to read together, but we pray that God will help us in our understanding of it this evening. The third chapter of 2 Samuel, as well as chapter 4, is not easy reading. We are talking about events that are taking place during a 7.5 year period in the history of Israel. Saul the king has died. David is anointed to be the king of Israel. But there's this period of time in between the death of Saul and David becoming king of all of Israel. It's a period of great stress, a period of great civil unrest, disagreement. We noticed that there were two kings, David appointed king in Judah, Ish-bosheth appointed by Abner the king over the other tribes of Israel. We noticed last week there are two sides. There's this constant civil unrest, disagreement. Not unlike perhaps a period of time perhaps in a nation's history. coming up to certain significant events, there are two clear sides. There's a sense of animosity, there's a sense of disagreement, there's a sense of not a coming together, not a sense of consensus in any sense. And as we look at chapters 3 and touch upon chapter 4 this evening, the opening verse of chapter 3 sets the context for what is certainly the tragic double murder that takes place in chapters 3 and 4. Now, we can sometimes think of what we would call political assassinations. And it'll be interesting in the next 3 or 4 weeks how much information that has been known by a number of people for a period of time has been kept in a cupboard, almost to say, or kept in a book, kept under lock. And as we'll get nearer to a significant time when a decision has to be made, these stories will come to light. And you have a sort of an agreement, well, why is it that happened so many long ago? Why is it being coming to light now? It's been thought of something profitable, it's been kept in the back, and then it's going to be brought up at a certain time. And what we have here is this sense of political assassination when somebody's character is maligned. But here we have this actual physical murder of two individuals, both seemingly on the Saul side of the story here, Abner in chapter 3, and then Ish-bosheth in chapter 4. And most commentators agree that this is all to do with Abner, and it's all to do with Joab. And David, in one sense, the anointed king, he's in this very difficult position. Now, we know that the book of Judges, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in their own eyes. The first book of Samuel is the people's king. It was Saul. He was tall. He was someone they could look up to. But again, he let them down. When we come to the second book of Samuel, and when we start to pick it up in chapter 5, we will see, yes, in many senses, David is God's king. And yet, although David is God's king, and in one sense, the other kings that follow through the book of Kings and Chronicles, they're in one sense, they're always compared to David as to whether they were any of profit to the land and profit to the nation. Yet there is a sense where what we're reading here is something tragic, because even David has his failures. David has his frailties. And we're going to see one tonight. And it's in the context of family ties. And in one sense, it's pointing us already away from David. David, you see, is not the Messiah. He's not the Messiah. And even here in this second book of Samuel, although we have much to be grateful for in the way that David conducts himself, as he did with Saul, and how he conducts himself further on in this book, there are going to be these little falls, these little mists, these little clouds that come over. The sun is, in one sense, blotted out because of thoughts and events and actions. And yet it's always not giving us a sense of discouragement. It's helping us to remind ourselves that he's not the Messiah. And yet we know there's promise all through the scriptures of one who would come to be the deliverer. So it's pointing us away from the trust in man, and it's pointing us to the one that we will trust in, the God-man, who's very coming into the world at this time of the year. We perhaps turn our attention to remember. Now, Abner is guided by a selfish ambition. We see it already. In one sense, when Saul was dead, it was over. His two other sons, three sons actually, including Jonathan and two others, were killed with Saul. And yet Abner, who had been the leader, the general, the commander of Saul's army, he now has placed himself in a significant position. And he's appointed Ish-bosheth, a fourth son, as a puppet king. But it's Abner who's controlling the strings. And what's all this about? Well, you see, Abner's thinking now, well, how is this going to work out for me? David's obviously going to become the king. How is it going to work out for me? Will my position be assured? Will I continue to be general? Well, he's already got a general. He's got Joab. And Joab's related to him. Now, what's going to happen to me? Will I be spared? Will I be considered a traitor? So he's thinking about all these things. And in one sense, as politicians from time to time in history, you notice they cross the floor. They will say the opposite. what they were saying. And sadly today, you see, with it's not just that you had to read it in Hansard. Years ago, it was very difficult. Somebody had to go back and read over pages and pages to find a quote. Well, today you've got people who can press a button and they can find it exactly. They've all got it on computer, and something you said 5 years ago, you've just said the opposite, and they put the two on the TV together for you, and there you are. You look as if you're someone who's crossed the floor. You're doing the exact opposite. Well, Abner comes into that category here because he, perhaps, how long had he had known this was futile to try and stand behind Ish-bosheth? Indeed, as you're looking here at a phrase, when he comes into this argument with Ish-bosheth, which we'll touch on in a moment, he says, have you not, make God deal with me, be it ever so severely, if I do not do for David what the Lord promised him on oath, verse 9. Abner knew about this. Abner was fighting against the revealed will of God. David was to be king. But what you see here is that is Abner now, he's trying to position himself now in a favourable light and perhaps to arrange it. So he's acting on behalf of Saul, and as you'll see it now from verse 12, he's the one then who starts this negotiation with David. Not Ish-bosheth, but Abner starts the negotiation. We'll come to that in a moment. But how then can he, extricate himself? How can he separate himself from Ish-bosheth and then look to be someone who's trying to bring about a negotiation? Well, commentators won't agree, but they certainly say here on the sense we have the breakdown of an arrangement between Ish-bosheth and Abner. And it happens over the argument of a woman, a concubine of Saul, a lady called Rizpah. Now, some commentators think Abner used this as an excuse to start changing sides and seeking then the shuttle diplomacy that he got involved in from verse 12 to verse 21. And we come to that in a moment. Although Abner denies a relationship with Rizpah in no uncertain terms, he could well have used this now as a cover story for his gradual withdrawal of support from Ish-bosheth. He could see that Ish-bosheth was never going to become the king. And the first verse tells us the war between the house of Saul and the house of David lasted a long time. David grew stronger and stronger, while the house of Saul grew weaker and weaker. Well, as you see that happening, he made a decision. I'm going to swap sides. You see, Abner had always been on the winning side. He had been appointed the general with Saul. He'd known victories with Saul. He was always on the winning side. And so at this point now, he wasn't going to be on the losing side. Now, you have some people who are like that. They'll change wind. They'll change direction. They've got to be on the winning side. Abner was so much more adept at manipulating circumstances to suit himself. Ish-bosheth was certainly only upon the throne because of Abner. And although he questioned Abner about this, we notice in verse 11 that after this challenge, a fear came upon Ish-bosheth. He was probably there already, and he never questioned Abner again. He probably thought then Abner thought that he could arrange an agreement with David. It would not only perhaps spare Abner's life, because Abner would be seen as someone who's bringing about this negotiation. But he knew, he knew how kind David had been in the past in his dealings with Saul and other members of the family, Jonathan, and that's who he thought, well, David would be very kind. And he might also obtain a good position even within the Davidic kingdom. He might be a general, or he might take over the role of Job. He might become a negotiator as he's trying to negotiate here on behalf of David in other situations. One way or another, Abner forced this situation by his actions, broke down his arrangement with Ish-bosheth, and began then negotiations with David. And what you see immediately with Abner, he's self-interested. He's only thinking about himself. There's craft here. There's guile. There's deception and sin. And it's all wrapped up in this incident. It reveals the human heart. And as we read of Abner, obviously we're standing back and we're looking and we're hearing so many conversations and we're hearing promises and we're hearing things that will happen and we're trying to weigh up carefully the words of those who aspire to be leaders, who aspire to be in positions of influence. And as well, we look perhaps at our own hearts and wonder, in our dealings with one another, are we like Abner? Is there craft? Is there guile? Is there deception? Are we perhaps changing sides slowly and surely? And we make something happen. Like in this incident with Rizpah, we make it happen so other things can go on. Now, the second thing we notice, the negotiations that begin in verse 12 to verse 21. The negotiations begin with Abner sending messengers to David, offering to bring all Israel under his rule in verse 12. The offer is accepted by David, we read about it in verse 13, but he makes provision, and provided that Michal, that's David's wife and Ishbosheth's sister, half-sister probably, is returned to him. Abner then tells Ishbosheth to agree to that. David also sends a message to Ishbosheth in verse 14. And then Abner confers, first of all, with the elders of Israel. That's verses 17 and 18. And he says, you've been longing for this. I can represent you on behalf of this situation. We don't have to fight anymore. We can come to an agreement. I'm the man to lead it. I'm the person you must look to. I'm the person who can do it for you. I'm thinking, I'm hearing this. I'm the one. I can do it. I've got a ready oven-packed agreement or whatever he's talking about. There we are. I'm the person who can do it. And then you have this picture of coming to the leaders of Benjamin. Now, a little bit more awkward there, because Saul was from the tribe of Benjamin. So he's got to negotiate with them in verse 19 as well. So all of Israel, the Benjamites particularly. And then Abner and 20 representatives and Michal then, David's wife, comes to Hebron. I read of that verse 15 and 16. And then verse 20 reminds us of this clearly, in terms of this is the arrangement that is made. So they come together to Hebron. David prepared a feast for him and his men. And so this agreement is made. And what you read, it's interesting, at the end of verse 21. So David sent Abner away and he went in peace. And you read the same in verse 22. And in verse 23, that he went away in peace. He has gone in peace. He'd been sent away and he'd gone in peace. So there's this understanding now, this animosity or this upset. We've come to a resolution. We've come to an agreement. We've come to an understanding. There's no need for anyone now to feel aggrieved or upset. We're coming to a conclusion to this difficult period between the death of Saul and then David becoming the king of Israel. It just so happened that Joab was very much like David in the time of Saul. David would be out on these raids, battling against the Philistines. You see, he still had enemies. It wasn't just this conflict within the nation, but there were still enemies to fight on the outside. And David always used to do that sort of job for Saul. Well, Joab has fallen into that capacity for David. And of course, while this has been going on, while these negotiations have been taking place in Hebron, Joab has been fighting and preserving the borders of Israel. And he comes back, and certainly with some plunder as well, and so it's been a good time. But Abner was no longer there with David in Hebron, because David had sent him away, and sent him away in peace, with a sort of clear understanding. Joab wasn't at all pleased with this. Here is a man who fears Abner. He hates Abner. He fears Abner because Abner is Saul's general. And he may then be, in doing these arrangements with David, he may be placing himself in a position where David might choose him to be the general and the commander of the forces. He hates Abner because of what happened in the previous chapter. Abner killed his brother Asahel in battle. After that hurt, the scar of Asahel's death on the battlefield, it's never healed in this man's, Joab's heart. And the phrase found then in that verse, he went away in peace. He went away in peace. He's gone in peace. Was not what Joab wanted to hear. It's not what Joab wanted to happen. And you see this in the fact that when he comes back to the king, verse 24, he speaks to the king. Now, in one sense, you've got to think this is a general speaking to the king. Well, there should be a sense of respect, sense of careful consideration of your words. He's the king. But what we have to remember now is that Joab is also David's nephew. David has a sister, Zeruiah. There are three sons. One, we've already, Asahel is already dead. There are two others, Abishai and Joab. And so he's speaking now to his uncle. And what does he say? What have you done? With a question said in verse 24. Look, Abner came to you. Why did you let him go? Now he is gone. And you pick up something of this at the end of the chapter where David has to admit he feels weak. He feels weak as a king because he says the sons of Zeruiah, his sister, they're too strong for me. And that word strong means that they're harsh, they're hard, they don't take the line that he's trying to lead on. And yet they're family. They're family. Now, can you see the problem? They're family. So how do you tackle this? How do you get around it? Well, Joab acts like a psychologist. You see it here. He begins to berate. It's a political assassination. He says, you know, Abner, he's come to see you. You don't know him, really, do you? He's come to deceive you and to observe your movements and find out everything you're doing. That's what he says there in verse 25. So he's sort of already working at David and saying, you know, he's come, you've made this arrangement. You don't know him. He's not for you. He's against you. And these little seeds get planted. And we know it. We have folk come to us and we made a suggestion. We're going along a certain path and they come in. It's not suiting them, see? It's not suiting them. And so everything now is up in the air. Oh, you've gone, you've done wrong. Why have you done this? And the sort of, why have you let him go? And now, one thing we've got to mention, we've got to remember where all this is taking place. It's taking place, verse 19 tells us, in a place called Hebron. Now, what's significant about this place is that Hebron, it was part of the inheritance of Caleb, a friend of Joshua, but Hebron was what was called a city of refuge. You see reference to it in Joshua's book, chapter 20, verse 7. There were six of these little cities of refuge. And what it meant was somebody perhaps was involved in a conflict or an accident could take place and someone died suddenly, unintentionally. It wasn't purposely done. It wasn't with vindictiveness. That would be a direct murder and manslaughter. But this is something now that's just happened. And of course, the family hear about it and they begin to pursue the person who has committed the crime, they feel. And there's a blood feud and they want to see him dead. Well, what an individual would do, he would run to a city of refuge. He'd be safe there until such time as a court case could take place and the evidence could be looked at. And if then the judge declared him not guilty, he was free. And if he was then killed, consequences would come upon the family members who had done it. So we're at Hebron, and this arrangement has been made between David and Abner, and Joab now, without David knowing, it clearly tells us that, without David knowing, Joab sent messengers, but David did not know it. Verse 26 tells us that, and perhaps he said on behalf of David, Abner, would you just come back? There's a few little further details now. I was away and a few other little details now that David just wants to sort out with you now. Can you come back to Hebron and we can have a little quick... It won't take long. And there we are. He comes back. The city of refuge, in peace. Everything's to be, you know, everything is going along fine. Abner thinks things are coming to conclusion for me. It's coming to what I would like it to be. And while they were there then... sort of taken aside as if it was a private conversation, and without further ado, Joab takes matters into his own hands and giving the impression of a secret meeting, but he kills Abner in revenge. And probably, when asked about it, he would have said, well, it was self-defense. This is what usually happens. Well, Abner came and he got nasty, you know what he's like, and I had to defend myself, and so that's how it happened. But you can see again, there's guile, there's deceit, there's hypocrisy, there's sin in all of this. And this is happening around David. And it just reminds us that we live in a world like that, and you have to be on your guard. And David knew nothing about it. Now, what happens then when perhaps it comes to light? Now, such an act deserved judicial punishment. We remember how David had dealt with an Amalekite in chapter 1, remember? And the Amalekite actually hadn't killed Saul. He claimed he had, thinking that by bringing his crown or by bringing his amulet or armlet, that David would reward him. And David said, "You killed the Lord's anointed." And there was a judicial judgment upon that Amalekite. And we know what should have happened here. We know what should have happened. No question about it. There's hatred. There's animosity. Yes, Azahel had been killed, but he'd been killed in battle. And the fact was, Abner had told him twice, "Stand off me. Stand off me. What would happen if I killed you? What would it bring between me and your brother?" He warned him twice, and he wouldn't listen. And he was killed on the battlefield. And in one sense, it's tragic, but that's a battlefield incident. It's not anything now of this nature. And how was he to deal with this then? Well, it's compounded by two things. First of all, Abishai is mentioned. If you notice here in verse 30, Joab and his brother Abishai murdered Abner. So it was Joab with a dagger, but Abishai was involved in this, the other brother. Now, Abishai had an experience with David. Sometime back, it's referred to in 1 Samuel 26, David went down into the camp of Saul. Cruse of oil, cruse of water, a cup that Saul drank from, and a spear. And what happened was, Abishai said to David, "Let me thrust him. Let me thrust him through." 1 Samuel 26, verse 8 and 9. "Oh, I'll only need one go. Give me a go, David. I'll put Saul to death for you now." And David said, You can't do that. Don't do that. He's the Lord's anointed. We'll take that little cup, we'll take his sword, spear, and we'll make a point of it." And Abner was upset because Abner was supposed to be protecting him. But Abishai had experience seeing how David dealt with people who were causing him trouble. And Saul had certainly caused him trouble over 10 years experience, 10 years a period of time. So Abishai had an example. He'd been mentored in one sense, and yet he was part and parcel of this. And not only that, but you see something of Joab here. That's the first thing, that Abishai was involved in it. But David was also Joab's uncle. And family ties were at stake. And also now, with Abner dead, well, it was only Joab could fill that role of the general. So you see the problem David's got now. Really, there should be a judicial judgment upon Joab, but he finds it difficult to do so because he's going to need Joab. Joab's fighting the battles on the outside. He can't lose him. So rather than do what should be done, he fudges it a bit, doesn't he? Oh yes, he talks about God, God will bring a curse on him, God deal with him. But as king, he should have handled that. He should have nipped that in the bud. It's going to cause trouble further on again. David certainly was a man after God's own heart in his dealings with Saul. Always stood back from Saul, didn't he? Had opportunity. But was partial in his dealings with Joab, his nephew. And we read something into that. And that comes in the context of our own family, in dealing perhaps with members of our family. The context of perhaps a church life as well. Those who perhaps we feel near and dear to. Times and circumstances, that things have to be said, things have to be done. And you have to do it. David failed at that point. What David does make Joab do, though, is to mourn Abner's death, to make him walk in front of the funeral, to tear his clothes, and David walks behind. And as with Saul and Jonathan, David pens a lament. You read of that in verse 34. "You fell as one falls before wicked men." That's a clear aside to Joab and Abishai as to who they are. That's the estimate that David has of them. But David perhaps himself feels it's difficult to deal with him as he would like to. And then he returns, he refuses to eat till the end of the day. We read of that in verse 35. That gives clear evidence again to the people that he wasn't part of this. It was the same sort of thing as before in the death of Saul. He wasn't part of what happened to Abner. His nephews then are described as being too strong, too harsh, too hard. Yet family ties prevents David from acting at that time as the king, as he should have. And then to close, basically chapter 4 is a repeat of chapter 1. Two men, they think, well, this will help us. Barna and Rechab, they decide now to bring it to conclusion. They will, Abner's dead, so they'll kill Ishbosheth. And again, they'd bring his head to David, and they'd say, we've protected you now from your enemy, and we've brought the throne and the kingdom into your hands. And of course, David deals with that exactly as he did in chapter 1, as he should have done with Joab, but he didn't. And so we see something here, a political intrigue. It failed. David recounts the Amalekites had certainly died as a result of it. And so these two men are also punished in the same way. And the crime is described as an innocent man in his own house, on his own bed. And as you think of Hebron being the city of refuge, what safer place could a man have, even if perhaps you have problems and difficulties with him, to be asleep on his bed in his own house? And for the murder to take place there. And again, it gives us something of the gruesome murder and something of the detail of it. And this sad event takes place then in chapter 4. But we're going to leave it there now, and we'll be returning back in December and looking more at the Christmas narratives. And then, God willing, we'll be able to pick up perhaps where we would like to have picked up. That Saul has died and David becomes the king of Israel and things move on in a more positive manner. But you just notice how the scripture, you see, you read the book of Chronicles and it skips all these chapters 3 to 5. It just says Saul died, David became king. It's a chronology, it's moving forward. But here you have some of the sad details of the human heart and self-interest and the need for us to examine ourselves in the light of things that are happening in the nation and in our own hearts and families. May God bless his word to our hearts this evening.